Welcome to the Money with Carla podcast with me, Carla Fainter. If this is your first time joining, you can expect chats about everything related to money, investing, also some career advice, and sometimes just random life stuff too. Thanks for being here.
I'm trying something a little bit different today, and I want to actually take some time to answer the questions that have been submitted to me via the form. And I want to actually do this in a more casual way. So I'll be going through the questions. And also, of course, I would like to continue receiving your questions. Please share as much detail as possible because that makes my life much easier. So the first question I got was from a 27-year-old chartered accountant living in Australia and saying, "Hey, Carla, I finally feel ready to start taking investing seriously. In Australia, the first thing everyone seems to shout is property. Not surprising. It's not only Australia. Right now, saving up for a 5% deposit on a house will take me 2 to 3 years. Property is still a goal of mine, but I want to be intentional where my money goes. So the question is, where is the best place to start when you're young? And should I stick to something safer like ETFs or start exploring riskier areas like individual stocks or other asset classes?" And then he's also sharing some insights on his and his wife's savings. And so I think that this is, I can relate to this so much because when I started working in London, when I started earning really well at my job, also as a chartered accountant, I think I was 25 years at the time. I also thought, okay, so I kind of knew that I should start to invest, but I didn't know what the smart way is to invest, and I also wanted to take a lot of risk with the same mindset, like, I'm young, I need to take a lot of risk because hopefully that's really going to pay off. So we're thinking, you know, should I go into individual stocks or should I consider other asset classes? So what I actually did is I invested in high yield bonds and I invested in high risk startups, and I didn't do that much stock picking, but I actually did some stock picking later, 2 to 3 years later. And I have to tell you, I actually have a video where I explain my investment mistakes in the past, and I'll share that in the caption. But I have to tell you that I really regret the thinking that I had when I started. And I wish I just put my money at the time into ETFs. He says that ETFs are safer, but in actual fact, if you're buying an equity ETF, that is giving you exposure to the average return of the stock market. And it is so hard for any fund, including the best hedge fund in the US, over a long term to beat the index. So if you're thinking that you as a chartered accountant that's got a full-time job is going to know which stocks to pick and which stocks will outperform the market, there are guys doing this full-time, guys and ladies, doing this full-time, and they can't get it right. They can't beat the market. And I mean, I have a lot of videos on this, and there's a lot of data. And they might have 1 or 2 or 3 lucky years, but over a 5 or a 10 or a 20 year timeline, it's so hard to beat the market. So don't go into risky stocks and don't think that you're going to be able to outperform the market because the chances are so slim. And to be honest, I would say the potential gain, like if you beat it with 1 or 2%, you could underperform it so far that you actually, the opportunity cost isn't worth it, in my opinion. And in terms of my investments, I invested in 5 startups in the UK, 4 or 5. 2 of them have already gone bust, and one of them is flourishing. I invested in a startup called Monzo, which is a fintech startup, and it's flourishing. But this is the really hard thing with private equity or venture capital investments, because I also worked in this space for a while in Switzerland, is that it's so crucial at which price you come in when you invest in unlisted companies. It's not an open market transaction, as in there are not a lot of bidders that set the price. So when you buy in, you're kind of taking the price that other shareholders or other investors have set. You don't know where you're coming in on the rankings on the share register. And these things play such a big role. So the startup that I invested in, Monzo, which is flourishing now, the price that I bought in at the time was so high because there was a lot of hype around this, that even if I sell now for more than $1 billion, I wouldn't make good money from this. I would have been much better off just investing in an S&P 500 or an MSCI World index ETF. So yeah, that's just some thinking around that. And I mean, I have the luxury of hindsight now, and I really wish I didn't do it the way I did. And then the next thing to mention there is that, I think you also mentioned that you're holding a lot of cash. And there I would say is that if you are so young, besides building up an emergency fund for yourself to between 3 to 6 months of living costs, I wouldn't hold too much cash. So you're going full out on risk scenario would mean going full out on equity ETFs. That would mean not holding low-risk ETFs, like bond ETFs, for example, and also not holding too much cash. But obviously, this is up to you. This depends on your risk appetite. And obviously, the ETFs that you choose to invest in are also up to you, because I'm not giving any financial advice. Oh, this is worthwhile mentioning, is that in Australia, you have a tax-smart way of investing called the super accounts. And I would also encourage you to look into those, because most countries have tax smart ways of investing that they either have more tax favorable, more favorable tax rates, or they give you an incentive, a tax incentive to invest in those accounts. But please make sure that the provider you're using is a low cost provider, and it allows you to self manage your ETFs. Also, obviously allows you to invest in low cost ETFs, because this can be quite crucial. Something else to consider is if you are planning on moving back to South Africa, I understand you are South African, perhaps consider whether you want to open up a tax-free savings account in South Africa. And that would really mean if you plan to retire in South Africa one day, then you would have tax-free investments here. And it's 36,000 a year that you can put in there for both you and your wife. So it's if you're earning well in Australia, that's not a significant amount of money. And then just to talk about the buying a property thing, is that there is a saying that young people, or that the advisory industry use to describe young individuals that buy property and they don't have anything else. They call them house poor. So that would mean buying a house and then having no money to invest in anything else. And there is this dream that has been sold to us by the previous generations that owning a property is everything. But in all the places that I've lived, in London and in Zurich specifically, I've just realized that putting your money into an investment, or fixing your money into a property that you're living in, doesn't always make sense. Especially, I mean, I've got many videos that analyze this in detail, but especially if you're not planning on living there for very long. And also, if you are a hardcore stock market investor and you know that your cash flow, if you're not putting it towards a property, it's going to go into the stock market, then I would really consider whether it is even worthwhile for you to go into a property. Then, that being said, in some cases, it does make sense to buy a primary residence or a place for you to live. In some countries, it's not a renter's market. So you might have landlords that kick you out. So you don't actually, and you might want to buy somewhere close to a school. And then once your child goes to a school, you don't want to be kicked out by the landlords, and then your child would need to change schools. So there are lifestyle reasons that people buy primary residences, or where it could make sense to buy your primary residence. But don't just take it at face value. Please question whether it makes sense. And the thing is, if you're not a hardcore stock market investor, as in you're not putting money towards your ETFs every month, then paying off a house is a forced way of saving. So it forces you to put your money, a certain amount, a big chunk of your salary, towards a property or paying off a mortgage. Where in the other case, if you're paying rent, then you could, you know, the extra cash flow that you would usually go towards your mortgage, once you've paid your rent, that extra cash flow could go into the stock market and allow you to build up a stock portfolio. But I've done this trade-off analysis in detail, and you have to go look at those videos to understand what this means, because otherwise this might not make sense. I'll also link those videos in the comments or in the caption. Okay, and then the next question I had was from a 28-year-old engineer that lives in South Africa. And then asks about, I want to pay off my home loan faster. Should I use my Access bond for my emergency savings while still adding in additional monthly payments towards the bond? So this is a good question. And I get this question often when I host events, is that if you're saving up your emergency fund 3 to 6 months of cash, it could either be in your bank account where you're earning some interest, or in some high interest account where, let's say, you get 7 or 8% in South Africa in Rand. Then your, on the other side, your mortgage or the cost on your bond could be more than, it probably is more than 10%. So the thinking about behind this is, does it help to have a chunk of cash sitting and earning 7%, while on the other side, you've got a bond that's earning, or that's costing you, sorry, more than 10%. So on the one side, you're earning 7%. On the other side, you're paying 10%. So the trade-off here is that it's much smarter to use the chunk of cash that you've got sitting that's only earning 7% and putting that towards your bond, or putting that into your access bond, because that's basically saving you 10% of interest. There are some other implications, like the tax considerations to think of, but it is, in my opinion, no-brainer to do it that way. Access bond is great because if something happens, then you can always access the money from your bond and use that for in case of an emergency. And the other thing to say here is that also consider whether it is smart to put all of your cash flow towards your mortgage. I see that you're trying to pay your mortgage off faster, and I understand that sometimes it could be psychologically beneficial to get rid of your mortgage because you don't have to worry about debt, or if it stresses you out, I could understand. But also consider whether you shouldn't rather be putting some of that cash flow into the stock market. Just, of course, you need to do your minimum payments on your mortgage. But the thinking behind this is, at least how I would think about it, is on the long-term average on an MSCI World ETF, between 12 and 14%, depending on which timeline you're looking, 12 and 14% in Rand terms. That could mean that if your mortgage is costing you 11%, you could potentially actually be making 12 to 14% over the long term in the stock market. Of course, that's not guaranteed. I'm just using some past returns to make assumptions. But on the one side, saving 11% of interest costs on your mortgage, or on the other side, potentially making 12 to 14%. So these are trade-off decisions that you need to make. And I'm just guiding you in terms of what you need to think of. So I think that is something good to consider for you, and also allows you not only to pay off your property, but also to start building up some investment or an investment portfolio. Okay, so the next question was from a self-employed 58-year-old living in South Africa, and saying, I've seen your suggestions on tax-free accounts, and I really like that. So I've got a video on tax-free savings accounts in South Africa that you need to watch if you haven't. And then my question is, would it be worth considering a tax-free savings account at the age of 58? Okay, so I would definitely, and then he's asking, what would the growth look like in 15 to 20 years? So I would definitely have a look at the TFSA, even if you're 58 years old. I know some of my content seems like it's only directed towards the younger audience. I'm definitely trying to change that because I have an average audience age of 40 years. So I should start also making content that doesn't necessarily only have a 40-year timeline to invest. So what I would say, at the age of 55, although this person is self-employed, it could potentially, let's work with a 65-year rough retirement age. The thing is, you're going to retire at 65, but you're not going to use all of your money at the age of 65. So you've actually, let's say you live 20 years or 30 years after that, until 95. That means you've actually got another 35 years or 37 years. You've got another 37 years for your money to grow if you're 58 years old. So definitely it will still be a smart investment. Your timeline is actually still quite long. And a TFSA, although it is accessible to you, right? That this is the one thing that people will say, is it's a TFSA. There's no forced long-term planning, as in it's not a retirement annuity product where it forces you to, you can only access it at a retirement age. Where a TFSA is accessible to you sooner at any point. So, but obviously, you are smart and you will use it in the smart way, which means maxing it out 36,000 a year and then going up to 500,000 over your lifetime. Still a very smart investment, even if you're 58 years old. And there are some other estate planning implications here to consider, where a retirement annuity has benefits that it kind of skips estate duty, and a TFSA does not. But despite that, TFSI has so much potential to grow a lot. And there is something else to mention is that as you age, your portfolio, your investment portfolio should not take too much risk on. But I would encourage you to look at your overall portfolio, like all of your investments, and take a bird's eye view. As in, do you have other properties? Do you have other investments? How much cash are you holding? And then look at the split between high risk and low risk assets. Because this is really dependent on your risk appetite. But when you're 60 years old, you could look at a 60-40, which is 60% equity and a 40% bond split in your portfolio. Or you could go higher, if you please, if you've got a higher risk appetite, or a 50-50 split. And the thing here is, have a look at your entire portfolio. Don't look at your TFSA in isolation and saying, okay, this 36,000 that I'm investing, I'm going to split that in my ratio, in my 50-50 ratio, for argument's sake, if you're choosing that. If you already have a lot of cash sitting or something in a fixed deposit or properties that you're renting out, those assets could already be seen as contributing towards your low-risk portion of your portfolio. Yeah, so I really just want to encourage you is to take a higher level picture and to have a look at your entire portfolio just before you decide how you're splitting it. Okay, I hope this was useful to you. I would love, next time I would also take on some questions that require analysis so that I can share my screen and draw up some charts for you. And yes, please let me know in the comments what you think of this. Should we do more of them or is it a bit boring? And I also would like you to please submit your questions, include as much detail as possible. And the last thing I wanted to say, oh, very important actually, how did I forget, is I don't give financial advice. Everything I share here is for educational purposes. I could make mistakes. So please do your own research before relying on anything I share. And if you need to, consult a professional, because I also don't give legal, estate planning, or tax or financial advice. None of those. This is only for education purposes. Okay, let me know what you think of this, and I will hopefully see you again for Question Wednesday. Question Wednesdays, which is Queensdays. Okay, bye.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you for joining. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, hit follow and share it with a friend. I'll talk to you next time.